go to Shaw again.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I want to ask you about the moral quality of the conditions clean and unclean. You've already answered this a little bit, but I'd like you to maybe address it a little more. Was there always a moral element to becoming unclean? And we have to, I think we have to conclude that since there were occasions when Jesus became unclean, that that was not the case. There wasn't always a moral quality to it. But if there wasn't always a moral quality to it, is the terminology that a lot of scholars use about ceremonially clean and unclean, that oftentimes this was an element of ceremony as opposed to an element of morality, is that, you think that's accurate, an accurate way to describe it?
I'm not sure what you're asking. When you say morally, when you say Jesus became morally unclean, are you?
No.
What do you mean? When you said Jesus became unclean.
If clean and unclean always have a moral component, as in unclean equals sin, you're sinning, but if you become unclean, then Jesus would have sinned because he became unclean. So that can't be the case. Right.
How did he sin? When he touched these people, you mean? Or I'm not sure what you...
When he became unclean by touching a dead body.
Okay.
If unclean always means a sin, then he would have sinned. So that can't be the case. So a lot of scholars say then that unclean doesn't mean morally unclean or sin. It means ceremonially unclean, as in you couldn't go to the tabernacle and participate in holy services.
Well, I think it certainly was a picture or a type of sin. And I'm not sure that... Now, this is the idea about Jesus, you know, and this is what a lot of the scholars say, commentators, for what it's worth, that when... That woman who came behind and touched the hem of his garment, that should have made him unclean. But instead of her uncleanness, now I don't know if this, think about this, instead of her uncleanness being transferred to him, his power was transferred to her. He said, I felt power go out of me. Or one translation says, I believe I felt virtue go out of me. And he stopped, you know, who touched me? And so he was not unclean. His power, his virtue, transferred to her, so she was immediately cleansed. And it was the same with the dead body, he touched the coffin, the bier. And so instead of the uncleanness being transferred to him, his power was transferred, and the body, he sat up alive. Now, if he was unclean, he should have not been allowed to go to the temple. I mean, he would have had to go through all those rituals. And so I don't believe that Jesus was unclean. And that's something maybe somebody wants to tackle and consider too. But I believe that's a good question. You know, if a person got leprosy, it wasn't because necessarily they were evil or sinful. I mean, it was just a disease that people would catch, you know. And then the house was unclean. And certainly the different animals, you know. So I don't know. I guess maybe ceremonially is the right is a term I know people use instead of moral, but ceremonial uncleanness. But it was all to me a type and a shadow of sin, a picture of sin that the Lord was painting. I'm not sure I'm answering your question. Go ahead, if you have a comment. You know, something I've learned, and I've told, I was just going to say this, and this is for the benefit of everybody who's a presenter, for whatever it's worth. I've learned to be able to say, I don't know. Or when somebody asks me a question, what do you think? So, Shahi, what do you think? Help me out.
I mean, Leviticus 12 says that childbirth causes uncleanness.
Right. Sure.
I don't think anyone would say there was anything immoral happening there. Right. So there were things that seem to have no moral quality to them, either positive or negative, but that still caused uncleanness. I just don't know if ceremonial, limiting it to I agree with your sermon. I want you to think that I disagree. I agree that much of this was to paint a picture. When we study through the book of Leviticus, Brother Bard and others would refer to these sections of Leviticus as this is remedial holiness or holiness 101. And as Roger taught us, this was starting from the outside and to show pictures of holiness that were based on fleshly ordinances and ceremonies. But, I mean, we just recently studied in the book of Numbers how they had to prepare this water for purification. And even the priests who prepared the water, which was meant to purify uncleanness, became unclean themselves. So in what way were they unclean? Or women who had children, was it just ceremonial? Or was there something else? Is that a good way to describe it?
Seems to me it is. I'm not sure it had anything to do. Certainly childbirth didn't have anything to do with immorality or ethical sin. And accidentally touching a dead body, it was accidental. Now, Jesus did it purposely, but I don't think it was transferred to him. But sometimes a person might accidentally touch a dead body, walk over a grave. I think maybe that's where that goes back to. Don't step on a grave, because they were unclean. That's why they would whitewash their graves. But it wasn't a moral thing. It wasn't a sin. It was just an accident. But then I'm unclean. I've got to go through all these ceremonies. So yeah, I guess it was ceremonial. That's a term I know that's used. So yeah.
I love by faith.
I thought it was a great sermon, Jerry. I do think that we need to be careful. I don't know that it's what Shahe or you were just saying is incorrect about ceremony. But we need to be careful with this word, because that's a setup word. It's a setup to say that the ceremonial parts of the law were taken out of the way, but not the moral parts of the law. And that's not true. The whole law was taken out of the way. And so you need to not be led to the next step in the use of ceremonially.
That's a good point. You know, I've talked to Sabbatarians before, and I say, you know, under the law, if a person broke the Sabbath day, they would be stoned to death. And they say, well, I don't think they use the word ceremony, but that part of the law has been done away with, but keeping the Sabbath hasn't been done away with. And they use some term there, but it was all taken away. And if we're going to keep the Sabbath day, we better stone people to death, because that was a part of that law. So that's that point.
Floyd Harris.
I wanted to question you about the prohibition of eating blood. That does or does not carry over to the Christian time.
Well, it does. According to the apostles, it does. You know, they had that meeting when circumcision, and there was this problem. The Judaizers want the Gentiles to keep the law, so they had the meeting, the apostles and the elders there in Jerusalem, and they decided that the Gentiles were not bound to law except they were to keep themselves from idols and not eat blood and no fornication. So that part of that's a universal, obviously a universal
thing strangled,
which would be the blood still in it. Yeah, so that still applies today. So rare steaks, is that the question? No. No, okay.
No. My point of one. Any other questions? Yeah, Floyd's got a follow-up there.
Well, I've known of people, you know, making what they call blood pudding. I never experienced it myself. But that's something that... you know,
I believe that'd be wrong.
People were.
I think it'd be wrong.
Not
I couldn't do it.
In that respect.
Yeah, and you know, there's a guy on TV. I forget his name, who goes all over the world and eats all kinds of things. And I was watching it. I don't watch it all the time, but I was watching it one time, and he was over somewhere, and they were eating blood. It was a blood, kind of a soup made out of blood. You know, and of course it was just nasty. And he was thinking, oh, this is delicious. But that'd be wrong. That'd be just as wrong from a scriptural standpoint as it could be. Not to mention just...
Johnny Elmore.
Jerry, you hear a lot of people say they don't see how the death of Jesus could have any relation toward our forgiveness and so forth. What is the word that you use when you die in somebody else's place?
Substitute or
yeah, but you know that, yeah, vicarious is what I'm trying to think about, and those same people are the benefits of vicarious sacrifice every day. If they eat meat, if they eat vegetables, it causes the death of something that's innocent. And it's as the poet said, I think something's expiring everywhere to give some other breath. And that's so true. And we are the recipients of the sacrifice.
That's a good point. There's no life without death. Even if you're a vegetarian, something dies. And so spiritually, that's the point.
Let me ask one real quick while others are thinking. I believe you said that when Jesus says, it's not that which goes into a man that defiles him, but that which comes out of a man, that he's teaching a principle of the new dispensation, the Christian era. He's teaching something that was not the case under the law of Moses. Is that right?
They were still under the law of Moses, so yeah, that has to be correct.
But what he said really was not true of the law of Moses. You said it was the truth of the new dispensation, so it wouldn't have. I mean, in the law of Moses, what went into you did defile you, didn't it?
It made you, I don't know if we want to use the word ceremonial, but it made you ceremonially unclean. It did.
Defiled. So
of course, they came. The question was, why don't your disciples wash their hands before they eat? And so Jesus explained to them, it's not what goes into a man. It's not just because you don't wash your hands that you're unclean. It's what comes out of your heart.
Do you think Jesus was teaching? Because I gathered from your comment that you're saying Jesus was teaching a new covenant principle, and he was laying the groundwork maybe for the later teaching that the clean and unclean animals were going to pass away. Is that, did I understand you correctly?
That was not the specific answer to that may be what I said, but that wasn't the specific answer to their question. Their question was about washing, ceremonial washings, which were traditions. So I guess he was really showing them that your traditions are not according to the Word of God. But the principle is reiterated by Paul in these passages that any animal is accepted if we pray for it. And so it's not what we take in that defiles us spiritually. It's what comes out of the heart. But under the law of Moses, they were unclean if they ate these animals.
I was just thinking, if this is a new covenant principle, and he's teaching something that's different from the law of Moses, this is a new covenant principle, then that's a pretty good, powerful illustration for those among our own brethren who say Jesus didn't teach any new covenant principles, that Jesus only taught the law of Moses. This would be a new covenant teaching that he gave. But I don't know. I just wanted to see you clarify, is he contradicting or is he circumventing or whatever the word you could use, the old covenant teaching on clean and unclean animals?
It's a good question. I didn't look at it, just I need to think about that. That's a good question. He certainly anticipates, that's the right word, the fact that these animals would not be unclean under the New Testament. I'm not sure that was the specific thing he was dealing with there. So I don't know, but we know he did teach New Testament principles in other places. It's a good question.
Let's go to Shahe and then Matt Cooter.
Now, if I'm misstating something here, just tell me, but in Mark's account, that's exactly what it says, what Clint was saying. In verse 19, verse 18 is, whatever goes into a person from the outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled. And then there's that parenthetical statement in Mark's account, thus he declared all foods clean.
Mark 7.
Mark 7 and verse 19.
Thus purifying all foods.
Yeah, I think I got the English Standard Version right here. But.
Well, I've taught more than I realized this evening. That's good. That's really good. Really, that is. That's excellent. I've never paid attention to that.
It's not in Matthew's account, but it is. Right,
I've never paid
Mark's
attention
account.
To that. This says, this is the New King James, I believe. It says, thus purifying all foods. But yours, what is your translation? It says,
thus he declared all foods clean.
What translation is that?
It's the ESV.
That's what he said then, and that's pretty good. From now on, that's what I'm going to say.
We'll see. Let's see if Matt Cooter has.
Unless somebody knocks it down.
Matthew's account is a little different here. He leaves out some of the details of these traditions. This is Matthew 15. His account's a little different. He leaves out some of the details because he was writing to Jewish people. And Jesus starts the discourse here with with the Pharisees talking about why the disciples eat with unwashed hands. And then he also ends with that as well. He says, then verse 20, this is the English Standard, so it might be a little different for some people, but these are what defile a person, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile anybody.
So there he's answering their question about just because this was a tradition, really, that they had, that you had to ceremonially wash your hands before you ate anything, clean or unclean. And the disciples didn't do it. But that passage in Mark, with that little parenthetical statement or whatever, is pretty interesting. Thus he made all food clean.
What I'm thinking is, if that's the case in Mark, is that an insertion from Mark? It's not just something Mark says. That Mark says Jesus taught something that applied in the New Testament, making all foods clean. And that's pretty compelling, isn't it?
Because that would not have applied until after the law was taken away.
Okay, let's go to Shahay and then I'll move on.
Well, and what might be interesting about that is that tradition says that Mark wrote his gospel under Peter's supervision. And so Peter's the one who was given the vision in Acts 10. And perhaps that reminded Peter of what Jesus had already taught. This was something that Jesus already prepared his disciples to encounter. And then, of course, in Acts 10, the whole contrast, the clean and unclean animals, is used as an illustration between the Jews and the Gentiles. And this is then, as you taught us, to encourage and exhort Peter to take the gospel to the Gentiles. So perhaps it was Peter who remembered, hey, Jesus said something about this, Mark. You ought to throw that in. Of course, that's a good amount of speculation, but you know, it's interesting that Mark includes it and Matthew doesn't.
That's really great. Next time I preach this, I'm bringing this in.
Okay,
that's great.
Alan and then Johnny Elmore.
I just wanted to say on this back what Floyd was asking a minute ago about eating blood, things strangled, fornication, and so on that they said to abstain from. When the law was taken out of the way, let me back up. We should not eat blood, but it's not because the law said don't eat blood. The law did say that, but it's because the New Testament says that. There were certain principles from the law or statements from the law that were brought over unchanged. Sometimes something was brought over, but something was taken away from it, or something was added to it, or sometimes things weren't brought over at all. But we abstain from things strangled and from blood and from fornication and idols because the New Testament says so. And it's the New Testament doctrine. The entire law was taken out of the way.
It's true.
Johnny Elmore now.
I just wanted to point out that there, where it says they were, when they said, what comes out of the mouth, this defiles a man. The disciples said the Pharisees were offended. Why were they offended? It was different from what they'd heard.
Mm-hmm.